Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM, a program meant to bring you ideas, concepts, and guests, help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we've got to, welcome back, huh? We're on a little hiatus there. We had some special programming this past week. Today we're going to bring you some interesting information, and now there'll be no programmas interruptus for a little while. We seem to be back with you for a short while. We were originally scheduled for another interruption next week, which will not happen, thanks to the wisdom of the WBAI staff. But today we're going to talk about clutter. Yes, clutter. This idea of living with stuff. We love stuff. We hate stuff. How did we get so much stuff? How do we ever dig out? You know, you all probably know and live with a lot of clutter, especially nowadays. You know, if you have a home, many of you have clutter in the attic, clutter in the basement, clutter in your office, clutter in your kitchen, clutter in your cabinets, in the pantry if you're lucky enough to have a pantry, clutter, you know, things which is the accumulation of things, or unless you're one of those people who feng shui your lives, then you don't clutter, then you get rid of things. Then, like my old friend Deborah Hillman used to say, everything has to be either beautiful or practical. You know, it must be either beautiful or practical. And it must fill those two, one or two of those requirements. It must either be beautiful or practical. And that's the only one of two requirements, you know, and hopefully both, if it's going to be in view. Well, sometimes clutter gets out of hand. And then we go from clutterers, people who clutter, to hoarders. H-O-A-R-D-E-R-S. You know, there's a disorder of hoarder. The hoarder disorder. Yes, I know. You know, we in the field of psychiatry, we love to make up names for things. Yeah, so we have now OCDHD. No, O-C-H-D. Obsessive compulsive hoarder disorder. You see now, for other people, it's the obsessive-compulsive clutter disorder. But it's not really, there is no real obsessive-compulsive clutter disorder, because clutter is considered just a way of being. You live a messy life. But hoarding is a different thing and often confused. There's a difference between hoarding and clutter, but they look the same sometimes. Here's the difference. Someone who hoards has a psychiatric condition that is not very popular. It's not very frequent. This person obsesses over their stuff, and they usually don't get out of it unless they find some professional help. The collected stuff will cause serious distress and discomfort and will limit the person's ability to make good use of their house or their rooms, and they will not take out the trash and often keep just about anything. I had an aunt. Aunt? Aunt. Aunt. I had all three of those. No, I had an aunt. And she lived on 60th Street, First Avenue. She died. But before she did, she got on in age. She had a six-room apartment, paid $92 a month. And in her six-room apartment, she saved newspapers. And she was, you know, she was wacky. She didn't let anybody in her house. She had this OCHD. And she had newspaper upon newspaper upon newspaper upon newspaper, but she also saved other things, paper bags. Every paper bag she ever found. And then she found, you know, she was alive before plastic bags. Then she started saving plastic bags. So she had plastic bags saved up and paper bags saved up. And she had newspapers saved. So it was all kind of fascinating as a kid. It got so that when you went into her apartment, you had to walk down aisles. And there were aisles of newspapers and aisles of newspapers and, you know, She was wacky. I have a neighbor now who saves, believe it or not, junk mail. Yes, he is, and he's in possession of his junk mail. I mean, he waits for the mailman. He is suspicious of people who, he thinks people steal his mail. And it's his junk mail. And he gets a good 20 or 30 magazines and pieces of junk mail every day. And he donates. He does a funny thing. He donates $2 to charitable organizations. And, you know, organizations. And so, therefore, he gets 100 junk mails because he's a donor. Right? Because they pass it along on the donor list. And so he takes all of this mail and he lines his house with it. And people in the building have a story about him, you know, and you can't get into his house. He won't let anyone in, you know, and you could tell he's suffering. He won't let anyone in his house. So that's what a hoarder is. That's what you call a hoarder. Cluttering affects millions of people. Someone that lives amongst clutter accumulates without much thought and would probably be able to make the changes themselves if motivated enough to do so. Like a yard sale, you know what I mean? You're moving. Time to have a yard sale. Okay, everything goes outside, let's get rid of everything. Right? And they put everything outside and they sell it. Or you have some friends coming over, and I do this periodically. Friends are coming over, we're going to have a party. Throw everything in a shopping bag. I like to do that twice a year. Everything on my desk goes in a shopping bag, and then I never unpack it. And I realized I could throw away the shopping bag after, you know, a few months. I realized that everything that went into that shopping bag I didn't need after all, but it sat on my desk for 3 months. Often it'll never get to an extreme point so as to debilitate the people, to debilitate your freedom or your comfort. Sometimes you have to wade through my desk to get at the keyboard, you know, but I can take out the trash and you throw away things. If you give it enough reason, you'll clean it up. Now, let's go back to the hoarding for a moment. You've all had a neighbor or somebody in your family who hoarded. I want you to understand the seriousness of it. And for you to understand hoarding puts you among the limited group of people who understand it. So let's focus on it today. This is an illness. Here we go. Why do people hoard? There's a few different reasons. The bottom line of it is your sense of identity, your sense of self is waning. You don't feel like you're here anymore. So people, as they get older, you know, as they feel like, you know, they're losing value in their life, tend to fall prey to this. The accumulation of material good, it doesn't create a material comfort. But getting rid of something will create a distress. Get the idea? Accumulating things doesn't make you feel good, but getting rid of something makes you feel nervous. They're afraid that if they get rid of something, they may lose something. Like if you get rid of an article, you may need it in the future. If you get rid of a rubber band, you may need it in the future. If you throw away a paper bag, you may need it in the future. But keeping it doesn't make you feel good. How often do you hear somebody say, I threw that item away and I found a use for it as soon as I threw it away? No, nobody ever says that. But rarely do that you end up, they, you know, rarely do they ever say, I have to keep it. You know, they always say, I have to keep it because someday I may need it. So the following are reasons why people hoard, and they are all closely linked. Number one, sentimental value. Now, you might expect that all the things that people keep have a purpose, that they are either meaningful or valuable. But the person, people that hoard, the useful and value may lay in the most unexpected things. Sentimental value is only one of the criteria. Sentimental value is only, it's that it's a part of you. The minute I discard this item, I discard not a part of something I love or somebody, but a part of myself. So you may have a button that was once on a shirt. And you liked the shirt. And the button came with a shirt, but the shirt you had to throw away, or the shirt was destroyed, but you keep the button, because the button is a part of you. So it's almost like you're saying the person who hoards this button is saying, and I'm not only saying hoarding, I'm saying also with cluttering, a person with a shaky identity will often keep something that helps them feel like there's a part of themselves that is shaky. I don't know who I am, so I'm going to keep the button to remind myself who I am. Sometimes, if you have an inability to make decisions. Now, there's a whole bunch of people out there, about one quarter of the population, who has a great difficulty making decisions. Are you one of those people? Usually intellectual types. They think all the time. They're always trying to make decisions. They trust authorities a great deal. They're thinking, thinking, thinking. They feel very little, but they think and they try to figure things out. They're very good in the abstract world, but not very good in the world of feelings and emotions. Those people who are not good at making decisions, they can't make the decision to throw something away. So people with difficulties of making decisions very often have a lot of clutter in their life because they can't decide to throw something away. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, trying to make you make sense out of clutter and hoarding two things, hoping you could understand. So indecisive people in general tend to have great difficulty in getting rid of things. You know, an indecisive person is always afraid of making a mistake. So they don't want to make mistakes. And in general, if they throw something away, they make a mistake. If they keep it, they don't make a mistake. So it's not like they feel better for keeping it. It's just that they don't feel bad. You understand? By throwing it away. All right, number three, another reason why people tend to keep things and clutter is this sense of organizing. You see, whenever you're under pressure, there's a tendency to organize. Almost everybody who lives with a lot of anxiety loves to organize under pressure. If you're a nervous type, you'll see the more nervous you get, the more you tend to organize. You tend to gather yourself by organizing. Animals do that, you know? People do that. You want to organize. You want to try to prove that your mind could work. There's difficulty with knowing how to organize objects, not being able to see how you'd possibly store them in a logical fashion, right? So now, here you are with clutter, and you don't know what to do with it, and here it is, you don't know where to throw it, your mind is a shambles, your mind is abstract, and it's all over the place, and you have all these objects, and they keep coming in, and every time you open your mail, you have 50 more objects coming in your direction, and they're all on your desk. So what do? You put the important ones on top where you could see them. Keeping things in plain sight becomes another strategy for people who clutter. If you place them in sight in some way, you believe that you're on top of it. In fact, you even tell people, I could find it, right? I know exactly where it is on my desk. Yep, that registration that I'm supposed to be filling out, I know exactly where it is. I could go find it any minute now. So part of keeping things, part of the clutter is that you have a sense of mastery over the pile, and that you have a sense of organization over the pile. It makes you feel good in some way to be able to have mastery over this pile, even though in effect you'd have much more mastery if there was no pile. Armand DeMille with you. Number three, four, five, now. Sense of responsibility. People tend to feel hyper-responsible for what's happening around them and for the people they care for. With hoarding, this can result in a just-in-case. Now, just-in-case objects being carried around all the time. There are some people who carry huge purses with them, pocketbooks, that could easily knock anybody out. And in that purse, they have anything in case they need to have it. You know, you ask them, you got an iron? Oh, yeah, I have an iron right here. You need an iron? Right? We got that right here. What do you need? Right? Okay, rubber band? Sure, sure. You got a pen? Sure. You got a match? Nail file? Whatever you need. It's right here in this purse. You can buy these flexible purses, big purses. So there's this sense of responsibility of just-in-case objects. Now, this extends itself because later we'll learn about people who collect things. You see, part of the success of the Internet and of the home shopping network is the just-in-case. People buy things online just in case they need it. So there are two things that they buy. One thing is people buy many things just in case, right? We have this heater that's on sale, and we have a heater that's got 120,000 megawatts. And in case there's a fire or in case there's a cold spell, you can use this heater, and it could warm 250,000 square feet, right? And it has its own generator built in. In case an iceberg melts in your neighborhood. Oh, I got to get that. Right? Just in case. Just in case. And there are the just in case buyers. Just in case, you know, jewelry repair kit. Right? Anything you need, just in case. You know, do-it-yourself root canal kit. Whatever it is that people might get. Just in case, and they buy it, and people buy just-in-case stuff. It's kept the home shopping network in business. I don't need it. Just in case the one you have breaks, I'll get a backup. A lot of people buy backups. There are people who have been found, you know, people who die, and they die, and you get into their apartment, and you find lots of unopened packages from Home Shopping Network. Two parts to that. One of the things is you feel a social relationship with the Home Shopping Network by buying stuff online. There's an addiction, you know, to buying stuff. It's like having relationships with people by ordering stuff online. That's one. Number two, shopping could be an addiction. And number three, you're feeling secure by this compulsion to hoard and to buy things. We're going to be asking you about yourself, and we'll be taking your calls about this today as well. So another item we have here is buying. You should hear the kind of things that people hoard and save. It's amazing. A recent survey of people, of what people buy and hoard and save. Rubber bands is very big. It's one of the most popular items that people save. Did you ever save rubber bands in a ball? There is a place somewhere in Utah, I think it is, where the largest ball of rubber bands, it's like this big or ball of twine, something like that. You save twine or you save rubber balls. One guy saved 176 pair of pants, 49 suits, suit coats, 63 dress shirts. Another guy saves brochures from doctor's office. You know the stands that they throw out in the street sometimes where the free stands, you know, free take this article? There's a guy who saves all of those just in case he may need those one day. A man writes in that he has five ironing boards. He saves all nuts, bolts, and screws that he finds in case he may need a nut, bolt, and screw. People like new items that the person buys for no reason but because they're on sale. You know, you get things on sale because you want them on sale. They're brand new. Not that you may, because they may be useful. There are people who collect used tea bags. Yes, cigarette butts. Used fabric softener sheets and phone books. People collect beach glass, don't they? Well, that makes sense to everybody. Well, it's pretty, right? Beach glass, clothing, music CDs. How about people who collect Super 8? Right, Super 8. How about vinyls? How about a VHS? How about oatmeal? How about Betamax tapes? There are people going around collecting those. There are people who collect plastic grocery bags, plastic containers, clothing. You know, one person once said, if you ever want to start cleaning your house out, throw away only the plastic things. Don't shed everything. Just shed everything made of plastic. Let that be the first thing you get rid of. Keep anything made of glass. Keep anything made of wood. Get rid of only your plastic things and see what happens. And they said, it's amazing, amazing, amazing. You get it. You feel like you're making choices because you keep some beautiful things and you throw away some things that are not so beautiful. You wind up throwing away some of the utilitarian things, but saving some of the other things. Then there's the issue of control and perfectionism. It's like you lose. See, as you get older, you get afraid of forgetting things. And people who collect very often as they get older, they get afraid of forgetting. And so they keep things so as not to forget that they have them. And they keep them present and they remind themselves. So, one other point is that people who have a fear of letting go, of moving on, some people associate things with age. That if they've let go of things, they're letting go at age. The moment you throw something away, it's like you're throwing away your life. You know? So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I would like to hear from you at 212-209-2900 about your clutter, about your collecting, about the kind of things you collect, you know, about the way you live your life, about how clutter has affected you. I'd like you to share that with some of our audience today. 212-209-2900. It's such an interesting subject. As I've been digging into this, I've found that on the illness part of it, there are ways of treating it. It's kind of remarkable that the result of treating this with psychotherapy have been difficult because these people generally don't welcome anybody into their lives and they don't get seen. They wind up becoming isolates. The more you clutter and the more you collect, the more isolated you get. And it's almost like you're buying yourself a ticket to death. You know, the more you buy, you don't let people in your house. You don't go out anymore. And it saddens me. It saddens me that there's no way in. I have, as I said, I have a neighbor who I care about. I've known him for so many years, but he's completely closed himself off, offered to get him help, tried to bring help to him. He won't allow it. He won't allow anyone near him. And I'm watching him slowly bring himself to death, and I've done everything possible, everything. And imagine if it's me saying that, and he won't let anyone near. 212-209-2900. Let's hear from you. This is Armand DeMille. Let me take one of your calls. Hi there. You're on the air.
Armand?
Yes.
Peace and blessings. This is Rashida. How are
you
doing?
Hello, Rashida. It's been so long. How are you?
Yes, I am blessed and highly favored, and I think that you are having with your neighbor the experience of acceptance.
Yep, absolutely.
Wow. Oh, Armand, we just celebrated. My mom crossed over last week into the mighty light, and we had a beautiful celebration. I had my mother for 57 years. I am so thankful. That's all I feel is eternal joy and thankfulness. But that's another subject. I called you one time. Well, it's not a subject. I just wanted to share that with you and the audience because I know that wonderful vibration comes to me of love, and I appreciate that. I called you about, I don't know, a couple of years ago, and I was saying that I have this clutter. I feel that I was the president of the Pack Letters, and you said at that time that maybe because I might collect things or clutter, because I don't really hoard. I kind of just have stuff. It's like, I just cleared this area. Why is all this stuff back here again? Because you said it could be a thing of loneliness. I don't know if it was or not, but I know I'm clearing stuff out. I feel so unburdened, unencumbered, so light in my space and my being. And I looked in my bag the other day, I saw like 20 pens. Why do you have 20 pens in your bag? How many hands do you have? How much can you write? Oh, wow.
Are you still there?
Yes.
Well, let me ask you something. When did your mother die?
She crossed over last Wednesday, and we had a service for her yesterday.
And was it sudden, or was it...
No, she, remember, I don't know, well, you know, you talk to so many people.
I remember you.
I had been taking care of her. She had Alzheimer's, but she was, you know, like in and out. She knows some things sometimes. So she was no age-related illness, no arthritis, diabetes, no debilitating illness, nothing. And a week, on November 6th, she fell, and she broke her arm in two places. They were able to re-socket their elbow, and the wrist was a little broken. And, you know, they kept her, they just fixed it, they put in a cast and sent her home, and 2 days later she fell again. So we're realizing that maybe her equilibrium was off. The second day, there was nothing related to the fall, but now they started seeing things like her lungs seemed to be a little congested, her heart seems to be doing something else. And that day, my mom said to me that on the second fall, which was on Wednesday, November 8th, she says, Rashid, you see the little black boy up there? My brother had passed about 7 years ago. And I don't doubt when people say that those that have crossed over are seen by those that are getting ready to. And then she said, and there's the bridge over there. The next night, she stopped breathing, and they put on a resuscitator for 10 days. And my 10 brothers and sisters, the 10 of us said no. No, we're not going to force her to stay here. So they took her off last Wednesday, and she left 5 hours. She knew, she was well aware, she wasn't in a brain dead state, no coma. We were around her singing, I'll Always Love My Mama. I was saying, Mommy, you're free to fly, whatever you want to do. Because out of the 10 of us, 5 were willing to let her go, and 5 were holding on for dear life.
Wow.
And I believe when that energy, when they were able to say, Mom, we release you, those 5, that's when she left.
How many of your brothers and sisters?
10 of us here.
How many pens in your purse?
20. 25. I'm crazy. I said, what are you doing, girl? I dumped my bag the other day, and I do not. I try not to carry big bags, because the bigger they are, the more stuff you put in them.
Rashida, it's nice to hear from you.
Yes. So wonderful, Armand. I'm always here, always listening. Peace and blessings. Thank you for your contributions. Thank you for the role, the walk you are in this life. I so appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, peace and love.
Bye-bye. Kind spirit. 212-209-2900. I love RFWBAI audience. Let's take one more call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Oh, hello?
Hello there.
Okay, hi. This is Kathy. And I'm calling, I really wanted to talk a little bit about my sister, who has what I think could be the serious problem, like obsessive compulsive or something disorder.
Is she a collector?
Well, she collects, yeah, and now that I'm thinking about it, she doesn't live near me anymore. She lives about 5 hours upstate. She really is afraid to touch things like clean dishes, afraid of getting in the tub.
That's serious stuff.
Yeah.
How do you feel towards your sister, Kathy?
How do I feel towards her? Well, I just feel very sad about what's going on for her.
You feel very sad about what's going on for her. Do you love her and miss her? Sounds
yes,
like
I do, but, yeah.
But
it's been
why?
A long time. Well, it's been a long time since she went upstate, and I'm trying to think when it was. It was the early 80s.
Yeah.
She gave up a lot of her life.
Kathy, I want to talk to you about this, but I'm going to need you to stand by
for
a few minutes because we have to take a station break.
Okay.
Okay, and when we come back, we'll pick up with our phone call, okay? This is Armand DeMille. I'll be back with you in a few minutes. And when we come back, we'll play a little music, and then we'll pick up with Kathy.
Para hacer homo usted.
Hajidakis from Pink Martini's Sympathique album. Beautiful, isn't it? Isn't it? Never on Sunday. Never on Sunday, that's one of the themes of our program today. You know, wouldn't it be nice if you cluttered Never on Sunday? And if you just say, no, right, never on Sunday, we're going to clean it up on Sunday. That's what we're talking about today. In case you just tuned in, this is Armand DeMille with you, with the positive mind. And if my friends over at Mount Sinai Hospital are listening in for the first time today, I want to welcome you to WBAI. We have quite a few new friends joining us every day and every week. Welcome. So we're talking about hoarding, and we have on our line Kathy. And Kathy, you still with us? Let me see. Michael, do we still have Kathy?
Yes.
Oh, good, Kathy. So, Kathy, could you turn down your radio all the way? Is it all the way off?
Right.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can, Kathy. Kathy, I want to talk about you and your sister. Okay. Are you angry at your sister?
Am I angry at her?
The answer is yes.
Well, go ahead. Finish the story.
Okay. No, but I want you to say yes.
All right. Yes.
All right. Now tell me why you're angry at her. Say because she dissed me.
Okay. Because she dissed me.
Right. Now, right. How does it make you feel to say I'm angry at my sister? Say because it relieves me on some level.
Well, it does, yes.
All right.
Now that's,
we're doing very well.
Okay, go ahead.
What did you say? I know. All right, now what's important about that
right.
is that in whatever you're trying to do
yeah.
to work with her,
right.
and whatever you're trying to do to work with her, right. you're what's important here is that after all these years of trying to work with her,
mm-hmm.
it's very important for you to recognize that you got hurt a great deal in the middle of this.
Right. I know that.
You know, and she's a person who clearly, from what you're saying, has an illness.
Right.
A serious illness.
That's right.
And it's very tough. It's very tough. One of the things you have to realize when somebody has an illness like this
mm.
is you have to realize is that, number one, they're sick, and number two, you have a right to be angry at her. You have a right. Don't take away your right to be angry at them. One of the biggest difficulties we have with people when somebody dies
yeah.
is that they don't think they have a right to be angry at somebody who dies, but you do.
Right.
Because the child in you says, how could you leave me?
Uh-huh.
Is your sister an older sister?
No, I am.
Yeah. So your sister left you in a way. You know?
Yes, yeah, she did.
So there's a way that you would like to approach her, but she sounds like she would be very unreasonable to approach.
She's very volatile.
Very volatile.
Very difficult to speak with her, you know.
Yeah. Is she getting any help? Is she taking any medication? What's her story?
No, she's not. I mean, continually told her she needs somebody. I've spent, 10 hours at a time sometimes on the phone with her. But I know that it's not getting any place, in a sense. It's like relieving some of her condition temporarily, that she has somebody to talk to. She has seen a couple of therapists. She's seen somebody. She didn't really care for the woman too much. And
where does she live? What
she's
town?
She's up in Oneonta.
Oneonta. Where's Oneonta? It's upstate.
It's upstate. There's a SUNY school there. Cooperstown is nearby. That's where the baseball.
Is that where the lake is? Isn't there?
Yeah, there's a lake.
Oneonta Lake. I think I know somebody up there. By yes, George.
Like somebody who's a therapist.
Yeah, I think I know somebody right up there near. Yes, I do know somebody up there.
Really?
I know somebody up right up by the lake.
Oh, and I often tell her about your program and your clinic, and have tried even to get her to come down to see somebody because I feel that whoever she's seeing, nothing is changing, you know. I mean, she needs some kind of change.
Well, here's the thing we got to try. Let's try it a different way. How old, when you were kids together, how old was she? How much younger?
She's 9 years younger than me.
Ouch. That's a too big a difference. Did you take care of her when she was little?
I took care of all four of my younger sisters.
When she was little, what was her favorite thing to do? What was her favorite game?
I don't know.
Think back. What was her favorite toy?
Well...
Did she like dolls?
No, not, I don't think she was really a doll. She was kind of a run-outside, free, you know, tag, you know, outdoor games in the yard.
Like what kind of games?
Well, like tag or, you know, bicycles or, you know, those sort of activities, roller skates.
Does she skate now?
No, I don't think so.
Why not?
You know what, Darman? She's very depressed. I've been depressed.
See, she needs something. She needs something from childhood that she felt safe with. And maybe a pair of roller skates would do it. You know? And I don't mean inline skates. I mean roller skates.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think like, you know, you could get roller skates real cheaply.
Right.
I mean, and probably if you send it to her, she might start collecting them. But... But, you know, if you send her a pair of roller skates and say, I saw these and they reminded me of what you used to like to wear when you were a kid, you might want to try them out someday.
Yeah.
Or anything like that, you know, anything that would bring her back.
Yeah.
Anything that would bring her back, especially around Christmas or a time when it wouldn't be so far out to, for you to send her a present.
Uh-huh.
Something from the past, a jump rope, anything at all that would make her feel like a connection to her more vital self.
Okay. And then what?
That might open the door, and then wait for her response.
Right. And what about this person in Oneonta?
You have to go in through the side door.
Okay.
And the side door is going to have to be through something from childhood that she felt safe with.
Okay.
You know? I'll look for that number. Call my office at 757-4488. I'll dig up my Oneonta friend. I'll get you a name.
Okay, that would be great.
Okay. Thanks for calling in, Kathy.
Thank you, Mama. Thank you.
Right.
Bye.
Evans. I'll remember the name. Remind me. 212-757-4... Nope. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, you mean me?
Yes, you.
Okay. My name is Doris.
Hello, Doris.
I'm 82 years old. I've lived in the same house for 40 years. My husband died 2 years ago. And everyone, my younger generation mostly, are urging me to clear out the stuff from my house.
Uh-huh. Was your husband a collector?
Oh, well, he collected some things, yes, and I collected some things, yes.
What did you collect?
What do I collect? Books. And so did he, but his books and my books are kind of a separate set. I mean, you know, our interests weren't always the same.
So there you are. You know, all those memories are attached to those books.
And everything else in the house, too, right down to the house plants.
Yeah,
and
I understand.
This is home, and it wasn't, and with the main aspect of home, meaning him, gone, I cling to what still feels like home.
I
read articles about this kind of problem, and they're always by either younger people or even...
People who don't understand what it's like.
And excuses sexism, even by men. And I think a home is, it's really a woman's creative masterpiece.
A woman's creative masterpiece.
She doesn't have other creative outlets, but it really is very, very sticky. So in the past 2 years, though, I have managed to get rid of quite a few things and kiss them goodbye with tears in my eyes, things I know are neither useful
nor beautiful
at this stage of my life, but which were a big part of my life in the past.
Like, well, can you throw away anything that's plastic?
Oh, forget that. That theory would never work with me.
Why? Because you'd have no plastic in your house?
Well, of course I do. No, it isn't a matter of deciding what to get rid of. Well, yes, it is, but it's on a much deeper level than what it's made of.
I understand. What's your name, by the way?
Doris.
Doris. Hey, Doris, let me ask you something. You said it's a sexist thing. I think that's very interesting because women understand the home and men don't understand the meaning of a home. A woman builds the home and the home is like the nest. It's like a vital, essential part of being a woman. And men see it as like a place. If you ever see a young man's apartment, it's like, you know, nothing hanging on the wall.
Unless
I think you're right.
Hanging on the wall.
Yeah, unless there's a bicycle hanging on the wall. I have a wonderful story about a man I know. On Fire Island, there was a house he wanted to buy. And there was this woman who had this house, and her husband had died. And it was a beautiful stone house right on the beach. And it was a stone house on the beach, and husband had died, and he wanted to buy this house. And he said to her, I'm happy to buy your house. And the woman said, I would love to sell you my house because I need to leave here because my husband was in this house with me. But I can't part with it just yet. She had it up for sale. She said, can I wait 2 more weeks before I sell it to you? And he said, okay, we'll wait 2 more weeks. And that week, a giant hurricane came and swept through the island and took the house and swept it into the ocean. Now, she was fully insured, and she felt perfectly fine. At least the house went to the bottom of the ocean and all of her memories, so she didn't have to look at it anymore. He was perfectly happy because he didn't buy a house that wound up at the bottom of the ocean, and she felt much more at peace because she didn't have to make the decision and look at her house all the time and with those memories there.
Well, I did go on a 3-week trip last summer, and I was driving myself. I was with several different groups of people that I'd never met before. I had a good time, and I looked back at my house and my memory, you know, and I thought, I'd have a wonderful time no matter where I am. But I feel as though being back in my normal environment, between my community life with my friends and avocations and the things I want to do, of which I never got around to because I was too busy bringing up family and all that, this is the time to do those things. But believe me, uncluttering a house, giving and selling is a big job. That is business. And
sure.
I don't want to spend my time that way. And I don't want to let go of the things that make me feel like I'm at home. So I go ahead and do the things I really want to do instead.
Yeah. Is it possible that you could ask a friend to help you just with the small stuff?
Yes, I have, and I've gotten good help, and I've made some progress.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, this is a time of looking back and saying, gee, what was that all about, thinking about the various jobs and projects I'd taken on over a lifetime. And I want to write about it.
It'd be wonderful, Doris. I certainly would like to hear more about it. And if you ever do write about it, be sure to send it to me, would you?
I sure will.
Thank you, Doris.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Doris, what community are you in? What town?
Ridgewood, New Jersey.
Okay, I'll be thinking of you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What a good spirit, huh? What a good spirit. You think about 82 years old in Ridgewood, New Jersey. Good. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's hear from another caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
This is Paulette from New Jersey.
Hello, Paulette.
My husband used to be a collector, and I would threaten him that someday I was going to throw out all his stuff.
Oh, what did he collect?
Everything. After he died, I started carrying his stuff out to the garbage, and I would look up the alley to see if he was coming to be upset with me. And then,
what did he collect? Like, what kind of things?
Everything.
Well, you say everything. I mean, did he collect toy soldiers?
No, not that. You know. Anyway, now I can't throw any stuff anymore because I feel like I'm throwing him out.
Yeah, of course. So there are a lot of feelings that you have not dealt with about in separating with him. You see, when you created the ghost of your husband, it started saying that you were missing him on a level that you haven't dealt with yet. Part of separation, and I mean, I could only tell you that my grandmother still had my grandfather's hat in her closet, and she wouldn't even let people go in the closet because Grandpa's hat was in the closet. It was like he was staying there. And I understand, Paula, how it's like, how Paulette, how, you know, it's very difficult to let go of those last pieces. And I'm sure you must in order to free yourself. But it's very, very difficult because there are feelings that you haven't let go of yet. You have feelings that you haven't faced yet. There must be a level of pain and separation that you haven't taken on yet. Have you let yourself really cry?
Mm-hmm. I cry every day.
Yeah. And do you weep or do you fully feel like you're... Do you wish you could go into the bowel of the pain? Do you do it alone or is there anybody
with
you?
I'm there.
You're there right now. There's a place that you sound you're on the edge of, you know, you're on the precipice. And sometimes when you're grieving, there's a place you have to go to that's so deep, it's like the void. You have to sink into it to get through it. And what I'm hearing is you're right there, you're at the edge of it. And you can't go there by yourself. Sometimes you need somebody to be with you. Somebody to hold the rope while you're letting yourself jump into that space. I'd like you to help one of us, you know, like you to let one of us help you go into that spot. I hear how depressed you are. You've been trying to go through it alone, huh?
No, I have a lot of friends hanging around, calling me up, taking me out, not letting me be alone.
Take a look at my website. Take a look at my website and look through the part that talks about intense feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll find some help with that. Because there's a phase of this you have to go through. I can hear what's happening. Then you'll be able to free yourself. Because mm-hmm. you're right at the edge of it.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, Paulette. Thank you for calling in. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one more. Either you're on the air. Hello there. Hi there.
AI?
Yes.
Hi. I'm calling for Armand Show.
You're on.
Oh, great. Oh, let me turn my radio off. Excuse me. There you go. Hi, how are you?
Good.
Great. It's my first time calling in.
Hi there.
You? And my name is Susan. I was a little nervous about calling in, and your program today definitely hit me right at the core. And one of my issues, something that I definitely have been for several years trying to work through, is definitely a clutter issue as well. And I definitely feel there's no question in terms of therapy that I have been going through that a lot of it, I'm realizing just more recently, a lot of it is rage and anger. I think definitely with my family, my parents specifically.
Well, what are you talking about? Are you talking about clutter?
Yes.
Is rage and anger?
I feel some of it.
How does that collect? How does that connect?
I guess, you know, it's like always been trying to figure out, like why? Why do I do this? Why has this been? And I think what some of it is, I mean, I don't know, maybe even like an adult tantrum a little bit.
Uh-huh. A way of saying I'm not going to clean up my room?
I think so. And also probably a sense of control, probably something that I feel that I can control. I have a mom who's mentally ill and getting worse,
mm-hmm.
A father who, though we've made a lot of strides recently, is emotionally very disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what it was, but I feel like I know more what it is. But sometimes it's difficult. I have some close friends who are aware of my situation. One more that's a similar situation as I, not, I think, as bad as mine. And just trying to work through it, and it's hard because sometimes I just get physically overwhelmed even in trying to just start, like where to even start, like a sense of trying to create a sense of order and disorganization. Sometimes I can't even get myself organized, I think, or just anxiety in terms of trying to work through it. But it's something that I am working through little by little.
Yeah, I understand. You know, one of the things that you could possibly do, and I understand about doing it a little by little, you know, it's what's important is like it's a give and take,
mm-hmm.
you know, and let me give you, since it's the end of our program, let me mm-hmm. try to work this for you. And it's nice to speak with you. And thanks for calling in for the first time.
Thank you.
Let me suggest that you start small. Tackle one room or one part of one room at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Don't leave the area until you're finished.
Right.
Because you get distracted trying to find all that stuff in one area. It's one little piece at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try to give as many things to charity as possible so you can feel like you're moving stuff on.
I'm giving a lot of things away because my whole thing was I'm going to hold on to this for so-and-so or hold this or give this. And it never would happen. And I try to, I'm not as critical of myself anymore. If I don't complete something, I think I used to be pretty harsh because I think I had an unrealistic sense of trying to get a certain amount done. And I'm much more forgiving of myself. So I'll just, even if I just attack one small area and get that done, I find that's really helpful. But I think it also is recreating an anxiety that I grew up with.
I understand.
I think that's what I'm trying to work through, not having that in my life anymore.
You deserve it. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much, Armand.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. If you want to hear the replay of today's program, it's on thepositivemind.com. You can actually plug into that, and if you know somebody who hoards or is a clutterhead, you could send them the program. You could email it to them by going to the website, thepositivemind.com. Be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m.